Welcome to The Barbell Strikes Back. I'm your host, James McDermott, and today I have a very unique episode in the fact that there is no guest, and there's no big strong man feat of strength to talk about. It's just going to be me on a solo show. And I know I said way back in the introduction episode that I had planned on doing more of these solo shows, but, you know, things just kind of got away from me. One thing led to another, and I had all these people to interview, and that has been absolutely amazing. I've learned so much from everyone who has come on the show, and I'm grateful for their appearances and for all that they were willing to share. So that has been a great experience. Go back, check out all those episodes. Great stuff. And I have more interviews that I hope to conduct here in the future because I want to keep that part of the show going. I definitely enjoy it. But I want to get back to another goal of the podcast, which is to do these solo shows and to share more of my own personal experiences and the lessons that I've learned along the way. And I thought, what better place to start than how I came about to write the Dark Orchestra book, co-written with John North. He was on a couple episodes back. Definitely check out his episode when I interviewed him there. But in thinking about how it came to be, how did this book come into the world, I started to think about what did I learn from the experience. And that really drove me towards wanting to talk about this for the first official solo show. Because in many ways, there may not be a podcast right now had some of the things that happened to make that book possible not happened. So I think it's a very important place to start. So let's dive right into it. The Dark Orchestra book. Again, I co-wrote it with John North, his good friend of mine, excellent coach, legendary weightlifter in the sport of weightlifting. Chances are you know who he is. Now, to kind of go before that seminar where I met him at Albany CrossFit, I had just graduated from SUNY Cortland in the spring of 2012. And at the time, I was working at the Broome County YMCA and also the Vestal AMC movie theaters. And so I was working two jobs, getting paid no money at all. And I was also living in a frat house in Binghamton, New York, right there on Front Street, the House of Steel, right across from Tie Time, from those of you who are familiar with the area. And, you know, this was my second experience living in a quote unquote city area, because originally I'm from Afton, New York, which is very much a small country town. The summer before, I was living in Albany, for my internship at Albany CrossFit. And then now here I am living in Binghamton, just trying to work in the field of fitness. You know, before I moved into the frat house, which that came about because I just happened to be friends with some of the people that lived there and they let me move into an empty room. I was commuting back and forth from Afton to Binghamton to work at the YMCA because that was the only job involving fitness available to me and also in the area that I could maybe gain some experience while I was finishing up my degree. So it became a little bit more economical and a better experience to just live closer to work. So that happened. You know, I moved to Binghamton. I'm working at the Y, working at the movie theater, and I'm finishing up my degree. And I'm also going painfully in debt. I did some things that, you know, a young person does to kind of stay where all the action is. And, you know, I don't regret it, but I don't recommend it. But at one point, I was applying for credit cards to pay my rent because working two jobs was not paying the bills. Like I said, I was making no money. I think I was making like maybe $7 and some change at the YMCA to work shifts, and maybe about $9 for a personal training client. So for an hour of personal training, only $9 because the house or the YMCA kept the rest of whatever contract was purchased. And at the movie theater, I was probably making, you know, $8.25, something like that. Somehow I was making more at the movies. Anyways, so I went painfully in debt, taking out a credit card and then paying my rent with it. I definitely don't recommend that. It took me some time to pay all of them off because I was going from bank to bank in the area. All, you know, United Community, MMT, just all of them applying for credit cards. But, you know, I was just trying to survive. You know, I was a young young kid just trying to, again, be where the action is, work in the field of fitness, and then work in another job on the side to make that dream a reality, finish college, and also to stay living where I was. So that all happened, and that all took me to where I'm eventually going to go, which is back to Albany CrossFit. You know, I called the gym back again. I talked to Jason Ackerman. I talked to Jason Murphy. Both have been on the show right in the beginning, episodes 4 and 5, I believe. And, you know, they hired me back and I was on the team. So I moved back to Albany. You know, I left the frat house. I quit both of my jobs and I moved back to Albany just before June of 2012. And I had just finished up in May my degree for SUNY Cortland, exercise science, kinesiology. And also at the time, I'm dating Joanna, who I'm still with right now to this day. So I had made the plan on, okay, I'm going to move to Albany. I'm going to work at the best gym in the world. And I'm going to commute on weekends to go home and see Joanna. And I ended up doing that for 5 years until she moved back here. But anyways, not too long into being back in Albany and working at Albany CrossFit, I got word from my boss at the time, Jason Ackerman, that we were going to be hosting a weightlifting seminar. John North, Olympic weightlifter, national champion, was going to be coming to Albany CrossFit, and he was going to teach us a new way of doing the snatch and clean and jerk. And he was also going to teach us all about the sport of weightlifting. And being very much, you know, indoctrinated into CrossFit and drinking the Kool-Aid and all those things, I knew nothing about the sport of weightlifting. And I definitely wanted to learn how to teach these movements the best way possible. At the time, all we were doing was teaching the traditional CrossFit way using the Bergner method, you know, the Bergner warm-up, the skill transition exercises, things like that. And then also what we thought needed to be done. And I'll tell you right now, though, the Bergner warm-up and the skill transfer exercises, I still use them to this day. I will still teach a class with them. I will teach clients with them. I will recommend people do them. Coaches should 100% know how to teach those progressions. They are immensely valuable to everyone. It's a tried and proven way of doing it. But what was coming up with the Attitude Nation Level 1, the John North seminar, is he was going to teach us another way. So awesome. You know, add more tools to your tool belt. So he showed up on a weekend in early June 2012. And just before that, I wasn't really sure if I was even going to go. I wanted to go. I had never been to a seminar before. So this was going to be my first seminar. But also, it was on a Saturday. And I was typically going home to see Joanna. And I decided, okay, you know, maybe I'll go. And I talked to Jay about it. And I also mentioned to him, you know, I would like to go because he asked me if I was interested. I can't afford it. You know, here I am still in credit card debt, just trying to pay that off. I can't spend the $200 to do the seminar and also pay the rent that I have here in Albany and pay my bills. And, you know, he very graciously offered to pay for half of it, you know, and I'm glad that he paid for half of it and not the full thing. Cause now I had some skin in the game. Okay. I paid for part of it. I'm grateful that the business paid for the other half of it to allow me to go. But, you know, I'm glad it just wasn't given to me. I had to definitely work off the half that the business paid for it. But anyways, so, okay, the business is going to help me pay for the seminar. I told Joanna, hey, I'm not coming home this weekend. And it's the day of the event. And I decide, do I just go to the seminar and take it and have a fun time and learn, which I certainly did, or maybe I should bring a notebook and take notes because I don't know how I'm going to remember everything about this new way of teaching the snatch and the clean and jerk. So just very last minute, on a whim, I just grabbed a notebook that was on the kitchen table, grabbed a pen, went to the seminar. I also had my very thick Ray-Ban knee sleeves, and that's what I used to wear at the time. That's what everyone used to wear at the time. Now everyone wears different equipment. Don't really see the Ray-Bans anymore too much. You know, the big, thick blue ones, everyone has more compressed, slicker material, I guess, now these days. And at the time, I didn't have weightlifting shoes. So I was wearing a pair of white Innovates. Innovate is the brand, just a very minimalist style shoe. And I went to the seminar and right away, I was just taken aback. I've never been to a seminar before, but this was certainly something different because I had been in lectures at SUNY Cortland, lectures on all kinds of things like biomechanics, nutrition, exercise science. And what I immediately took away from this experience was this was going to be so much different than anything I've ever learned before. And what I was gathering from my fellow coaches is that this was going to be different for them as well, because when John told his story about who he was, what he's been through, and also, you know, how many times he's failed and the mistakes that he's made, and, you know, not only in the sport of weightlifting, but like things that he's done in life, you know, things that when you go to a seminar or you go to a workshop or just take a class at a college, no one was ever going to be that real about life or tell their story in just a very, you know, honest way. And it was just that alone, starting the seminar that way, was very sobering and just very awesome in a sense that, you know, this is going to be authentic. This is going to be real. Like nothing is being sugarcoated here. He is going to tell us that this is what you need to do to be a weightlifter. This is what you need to do to lift the heavy weights. And it was just going to be very raw and open and honest. And that alone was worth it, because it just showed that like you can coach and be a real person too. You don't have to be a caricature. You don't have to put up a fake show. You can just be yourself. And whether you've done, you know, things, you know, in life that other people wouldn't want to talk about, doesn't matter. If you talk about it, that's you. And so that was just a really cool thing that I thought came about from that seminar, and what I think a lot of others should do. Because after that, I started to go to many seminars, and you can kind of tell that the presentation was almost too polished. You know, it's like, okay, so you've never made a mistake in your life, you know, or this or that, you know. It's I really appreciated the honesty from John's seminar. And I also very much enjoyed learning about the hit and catch drill and bar body contact, which was something that was foreign to all of us at the time. That was making that contact with the bar was something that just wasn't talked about. You would see it in videos and you would wonder, okay, that's cool. I don't know how to do that though. I don't know how to make that happen. And at the Attitude Nation seminar, John showed us how to make that happen and why it will help you. And the results spoke for themselves. You know, there were so many PRs at that event. I even PR'd my clean and jerk. Yeah, it was at the time probably around 70 kilograms, which is 155, 154, 155 if you're working in pounds, which we typically were. And I got a 5 kilo PR. I hit 75 kilos. That's 165 pounds. Weighing somewhere is around 65 kilos. So somewhere is around 140 to 143. So I was skinny mini back at this point. And it was just an amazing experience. And I couldn't have asked for a better experience for a first time seminar. Never been exposed to one. And it certainly kind of set the bar high. And all throughout that seminar, I took diligent notes. Everything he was talking about, I wrote down. And in fact, I remember we made eye contact plenty of time throughout the seminar. And during those times, he was probably wondering, what is that guy doing? Because I was the only person there with a notebook, the only person there writing down the steps to the hit and catch drill, or what the archangel is, or why it's beneficial, you know, to get a deep catch position in the snatch, or even just why you got to move your feet, you know, any of these things that he was talking about and we go on to elaborate on in the book, The Dark Orchestra, I was writing it all down. So he probably definitely was wondering what was going on there. And I didn't get to explain that to him until many months later when we reconnected. So I wrote diligent notes. And after the seminar, the other coaches and myself at Albany CrossFit, we all got together just to kind of recap our experience. And we were again blown away. We had not heard about this stuff before. You know, again, we were teaching shrug and pull, you know, working with a PVC pipe. At this seminar, we started with a barbell. There was no PVC pipe. It was a barbell in your hands and it was hard. And one of the things that John emphasized on was that weightlifting is really, really hard. It's a hard sport, and these are hard skills, and it's going to take time to master them. So those are great things to kind of come away from that event with. But we all kind of got together and we were deciding on how do we even go about teaching this to our members at the gym in regular class, because we had spent so much time teaching it one way. So how do we roll this out to the membership, you know, on like, hey, there's another way, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And how do we just start to indoctrinate it into our programming and skills pieces before classes? And what we came away with was a cool way to kind of do this would be to host our own seminar. And that would be taking place in July. So it was probably about a month or so after that seminar with John, we decided we were going to host our own. And it was decided that I would type out all of my notes for the coaches to have to help us teach the seminar, and also to give to athletes who are going to come. That way they could take it with them and read and study. Because again, there was no book that I know about at the time that you could go into and read about bar oscillation and bar body contact or things like that. And these were things that John was talking about, and we just had no other resources other than his videos on YouTube, which I'll talk about more here in a second. So I was tasked with putting together my notes into a Word document. And this was the first big task I was given as an employee at Albany CrossFit. So I'd been working there, you know, I was in charge of, you know, I was the low man on the totem pole. You know, I wasn't the head coach yet. I was just a coach, and I was on the staff full time. I wasn't doing the programming. I was in charge of making sure all the equipment was in working order. The facilities were clean. I had a couple interns under me who I had to give tasks and jobs to. And then I was also tasked with continuing to learn, shadow classes, shadow the on-ramp, things like that. And so this was going to be my first like big task. And this brings me to the first lesson that I took away from all of this was really on just over-deliver. When if you're the new person at a job, or you are going to start a new partnership or anything like that, it's I feel like it's always good to over-deliver. Like when I used to work as a dishwasher in Afton, New York at Vincent's Pizzeria, I was busting my ass to wash those dishes. I wanted to be the best dishwasher in town, you know? And when I worked at a Kmart shortly after that, you know, I wanted to be the best cart pusher possibly, you know, could possibly be. You know, I wanted to get them all in there. My goal was to make sure that parking lot was empty. You couldn't find one cart in it. And then eventually when I got promoted to other departments and whatnot, that was continuing to be my mantra. You know, I'm going to over deliver. I'm going to show that I am capable and I could do a job so good that you wouldn't want anyone else to do this job. And so I took that with me to Albany CrossFit, and I put that into the pamphlet of just over-delivering. Everyone is expecting just a Word document, just my notes typed up, no bullet points, no bold headers, anything like that. No one is expecting much of this, just the plain Jane notes. So I took the next month, and I spent hours. Like Joanna could tell you, you know, I'm pretty sure I have a picture somewhere of her sitting next to me on the couch when she came up to Albany to visit. And there I am working on the computer to do this thing. And it's like, who are you doing it for? Why are you doing it? It's like, I'm trying to make a good impression with not only the people who just hired me, but also the community that this is going to be given to, the rest of the gym. And what I did was I went onto YouTube and I found John's Hit and Catch videos. It's a 3-part series. You can still find it today. If you just type it into YouTube, John North Hit and Catch, I'm sure it'll come right up. And what I did was I used that to expand my notes. And I also used it to pull pictures from, because on YouTube, I could pause it right when the bar is at his knees or right when he's making separation between the bar and his hips while initiating a certain part of the hit and catch drill, or a picture of him in the bottom of the squat. So I would pause the video at the certain point that I needed it to be at, and take a little screen capture and then use Photoshop to cut all the rest of the web page out of it. And just now I have a photo of John doing the Superman pole or the arched angel, you know, any of these things. And I inserted that into my notes and, you know, I made it look nice and pretty. I beefed up the text, added coaching cues. So not only did it have a description of what he talked about, here are some cues that coaches can use to help get that result. And there were little spacers to put in notes. I labeled every photo. So, you know, if he talked about pushing the knees back on the Superman pole and driving over the bar with the shoulders, there was a little arrow pointing to the knees or the shoulders, and then a label after that that explained, you know, what needed to happen. Knees back, chest out, any kind of cue you can imagine. So I my notes, which were probably about 10 or so pages front and back, ballooned into a 20-page pamphlet front and back with diagrams and beefed up material. And so I gave it to the rest of the coaching staff. Everyone was like, holy crap, you wrote a little book. And, you know, it turned into a, literally a little mini book on the seminar that we had just taken. And they gave it to the members. I'm sure people have the original one out there. We ended up reprinting it for a limited release when we first released the actual book, The Dark Orchestra. And I have a copy here as well. And so that's over-delivering, you know, make everyone really happy, impress people, and also show off your skills. Like, I had all these skills on a computer that no one knew about. No one knew I could do that. And that turned into, of course, many more projects later down the road, and more responsibility. But, you know, it was good to kind of show off what I was able to do, at least on the computer. So made that pamphlet. Eventually, it makes its way to John. I believe Jason Ackerman sent it to him. Months later, we're on a phone call, and I'm at the gym. I'm walking behind the rock wall over there because it was a nice private area, and I'm like, I can't believe I'm talking to John North on the phone. And he just kind of told me, hey, I saw this pamphlet that you made from the seminar. I think it's really cool. I'd like to turn it into a book. And he mentioned to me that he had been thinking about writing a book for quite some time. You know, just a short bio on, you know, his career, who he is, some of his thoughts on technique, and then, of course, his blog, which is also called The Dark Orchestra. We would pull all those blogs, put them in the back of the book. That way people could read all of it, know who he is, know how he feels about technique, and also read all of his creative and insightful writing on weightlifting with the blog. And we were going to have another meeting later on in the week. And that, again, comes back to lesson number one, over-deliver. So I'd only known what he had told me at the seminar or what he told us about his past. So what I need to do now, okay, that was our initial meeting. Hey, are you kind of interested in working on this project with me? Now I felt like the real interview, am I going to get this job or not and be able to pursue this opportunity, was going to come up later in the week when we got on a second phone call. So what did I do? I prepared for that meeting. You know, I looked up so many Cal Strength videos. I saw them all. I figured out, okay, when did he win the national title? What gym is he with now? You know, that was around the Muscle Driver time. And so I just did my research on John North. I also did my research on other books that would be similar. And that way I could come prepared to the table. Okay, this is what I think we could do. We could have a chapter on each one of the technique pieces that you talked about. We could have a chapter on the pull. We could have a chapter on the finish, the arched angel. We could have a chapter on the catch. And we could name those chapters in reminiscent of the terminology that you use in the seminar, you know, instead of just calling, you know, a chapter, you know, okay, this is the pull chapter, which, you know, like maybe a straight up just a technique book would just label it that way. Let's just call it Superman, the Superman pull. You know, let's use the terminology that you use in the Add to Nation seminar and just really make this something that people who love you and are your fans and follow you would be proud to have on their bookshelf. And, you know, he loved the presentation, obviously, because I got the job. So, and then that book, that pamphlet, and his idea of a short bio, some thoughts on technique, and all of his blogs ballooned over the course of years into 7 chapters on his bio and his story on going from being, you know, addicted to drugs and to eventually becoming national champion and everything in between during that period of time. That was 7 chapters right there, 7 chapters on technique, each broken down, how I already mentioned. And then, of course, in the back of the book, all of the blogs. And this kind of leads me into, you know, how did we develop this? Well, it took years. And how can something like this take years? We started in 2012. The book didn't come out until the summer of 2015. And it took so long for a couple of reasons. One, you know, I wasn't an author. You know, when the opportunity fell into my lap, I was excited about it because it had always been a dream of mine to write a book. You know, prior to CrossFit, you know, just being involved in strength and conditioning and going to school, you know, I follow guys like Jim Wendler and Eric Cressy and Christian Thibodeau and all those guys. They all had their own books. And so that's what I kind of assumed needed to happen eventually when you become a strength coach. Okay, you become a strength coach, you gain all this experience, and eventually you write a book. And that book would entail a lot of programming and maybe a little about yourself. So writing some sort of book was always a big goal of mine. It was a dream, actually. And now here I am working at Albany CrossFit for just a couple months, and it just fell right into my lap. And I had never thought it would happen so quickly like that. And I had no idea what I was doing. But you know what? I was willing to learn. And that brings me to lesson number 2 that I took away from this whole experience, which is live the lifestyle. And what I mean by that is 2 ways. I had to live the lifestyle of an author, of someone who is going to be willing to sit at a computer for hours, days, months, and years to produce a manuscript and learn everything that I could learn about the industry. You know, like how do you write a chapter? Like, where do you start? How do you number things? How do you lay all this out? How do you storyboard and figure out, okay, I have all these facts. How do I put them in order and put them and present them in a way that makes sense to the reader and is enjoyable? These were all things I had to learn how to do. I had to learn how to, you know, all about soft publishing or self-publishing, where you do all the work yourself. You just hire a company and you give them your manuscript and they turn it into a book for you. They print it and you have full creative control. So I had to live the lifestyle of an author. And then I also had to do the subject matter justice. I had to live the lifestyle of a weightlifter as well. I had to sign up for my first competition. You know, otherwise I would have felt like a hypocrite had I not done that. And to be honest, my hand was forced a little bit, because right after that meeting with John, shortly after in the fall, I had a mini stroke at the gym. And one of the things that event really affected was my breathing in Metcons. And I was making so much progress on Metcons. I was on the cusp of bar muscle ups, and I was finally doing workouts with, you know, RX weights and just really kind of getting there. I was on the like almost to the point of where I was going to be RXing most workouts and in a place that I would be happy with. And right about that time, I had the mini stroke and I couldn't breathe anymore during these Metcons. It was like you're suffocating. It was almost like trying to do the workouts with your mouth taped shut. And, you know, I come to find many years later, I had a little paralysis of the diaphragm, or at least that's what one doctor told me. And working on my breathing certainly helped with that. But it was just something that where I was like, okay, I can't do this one activity the way I want to. And there was some frustration with that because, of course, I wanted to continue, you know, doing these Metcons and pursuing, you know, a sub whatever Fran or at least an RX Fran, things like that. But okay, let me use this time just to get stronger. So I just started doing strength training on my own, started working on the snatch and the clean and jerk all on my own. And hey, I'm writing about it anyways. I should really be in tune with these movements. And then that turned into, okay, I'm going to do my first weightlifting meet. And this all happened in the span of probably about 2 months. I had the stroke in October. I was signed up and at my first weightlifting meet in December. So like, okay, this is just where we're at. There's nothing you can do about it. You can only control what you can control. What are you going to do now? Not going to stop training. Okay, I'll focus on strength. And hey, we talk about weightlifting meets a lot in this book. I should learn what it's like to go to one if I'm going to write about one. And starting to do weightlifting meets certainly helped me write kind of through the sequence of some of the meets that talked about in the book, because I had lived it a little bit by the time, you know, 2015 came around, and I could understand how hard weightlifting training was and how you're going to hurt every day and how you're going to be in the dark, you know, as John would say, because it's a dark sport and it's not easy. And some days are going to be frustrating where you can't snatch for your life, and other days you're going to PR, and there's going to be more bad days than good, and you stick with it because you love it. I had to learn all of that firsthand, and I think that that played a lot into the success of the book and making it more authentic. And I would say that's, you know, lesson number two, live the lifestyle. So I had to live the lifestyle as an author, had to live the lifestyle as a weightlifter. And that's also when I started to coach weightlifting specifically, and then also started the Albany CrossFit Barbell Club in 2014. So all of it happened very, very quickly, but it all helped in the end. And, you know, in producing, you know, the manuscript, developing it, you know, I had to do, you know, something that, you know, it wasn't always easy, and it's not always easy for people. And that's lesson number three, and that's ask for help. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know if what I was writing was any good. I need feedback. So I asked a lot of people for help. You know, I asked Coach Pat from Albany CrossFit to be my head editor, and he was able to, you know, he tore apart my first manuscript with no mercy. No mercy was given. There was so much red pen all over it. You know, like, this doesn't make sense. Why would you say it like that? Just completely tore it apart. And I'm grateful for that, because I'm glad I asked for that feedback. And that's lesson number three, is ask for help. You know, there was a member at Albany CrossFit. His name was Chris Smith. And he worked for a company called Lingualinks. And what they did was translation. They would take a pamphlet or a manuscript that's in Russian and translate it to Spanish or English or some whatever language something needed to be translated to. They would do that type of work and put together this project for you. And they had never produced a book. They had never done typesetting before. But Chris got me into the door there, and he hooked me up with a designer, programmer named Jordan at Lingualinks, and he managed the project. And together, the three of us put together what you see now on the bookshelf. I would not have been able to do that had I not asked for help, and had I not, you know, been receptive to that feedback that was coming back my way. And I think that that's something that people can definitely learn from. It's like, how often are you asking for help, whether it be your training, whether it be your job? You know, like, I still to this day ask people for help and for feedback on the job that I do. And I think that that's something that a lot of people can look inward on themselves. You know, whatever it is that you're doing, I'm sure it could probably be a little bit better. And the way you'll get better is by asking for help. So I asked Pat to edit it and to read it. Joanna read it so many times. I think if I was going to pick one person in the world who has read The Dark Orchestra more times than anyone else, it's got to be Joanna. And she read it, you know, in its rawest form and then in its final form. And she was always a great sounding board and great to get feedback from and just kind of explain my ideas on where this whole thing would go. So that's lesson number three, ask for help. And I would roll right into lesson number four, which is know why and who you're doing whatever it is you're doing for. You know, we decided to go the route of self-publishing. And one, you kind of need to know someone to go with, like a publishing company. You know, I'm sure a big publishing companies get offers all the time. Hey, will you print my book, you know, and promote my book for me? And when I started to research that part of the industry, I started to learn more things that I didn't like about it. And that was, you know, okay, you have a publisher, you have an agent, things like that. And you're inviting all of these people into your project, and they now also have creative say over your project. You know, it could have been very easily, you know, done that we went with a publisher and they're like, hey guys, we don't like the vulgar language in the book. We don't like the presentation of the blogs, you know, because the blogs are in their original state. The Dark Orchestra blog itself is a journal. It's a journal of a professional athlete going through whatever they're going through in the sport and relaying their experiences and their thoughts. So it seemed wrong to edit a personal journal. So they're presented in there with, you know, spelling mistakes, things like that. And that's something that an actual publisher probably would not allow. Or maybe they decide, hey, you can't teach this way. You know, like everyone teaches this way. We would like this to conform with what most books out there are doing these days, you know, very corporate. And I just didn't like that. Instead, my mission for the book was to first write this book in a way that represents John and his story with authenticity. And if he loves it, I know other people will love it. And the people that follow him will love it. So the test will be when he reads it. If he doesn't like it, then man, I've failed. But if he loves it and he's on board and he's shouting to the moon and back, it's the greatest thing he's written or read, then I know I've done my job right. So I wrote this book for him. At no point in my head was I like, all right, we're going to write this book. It's going to make a lot of money, things like that. That was like an afterthought. Like the main mission was for me just to spend years writing a book that John North and Jessica North, his wife, will like. And if they love it, then we're going to be successful. Everything else was secondary. And so I knew why I was writing it and I knew who I was writing it for, and self-publishing seemed like the way to go. And that's when I got in contact with a local company, the Troy Bookmakers. Right now we go through Amazon because self-publishing is extremely easy. Anyone who's listening to this right now, you can write a book, you can get a cover for it, you can design it, you can put it on Amazon tomorrow. You know, there will be some filtering processes to make sure everything will print correctly. And when they cut the actual physical copy of the book, it comes out the you know, looking good. But you can write your own book. You don't have to sign with a company. And in many ways, you probably shouldn't, you know, because then you're kind of signing away your baby. You're signing away your intellectual property. And if you are going to do something like that, again, I don't know 100% about it because I didn't go that route. But read any and all letters and lines of a contract and make sure you know what you're signing. And also make sure you know your rights and who has say over what, because we've all probably heard stories about that going south very, very quickly. So don't be so jumpy to sign on to something and or sign your name away or whatever. So self-publishing, that was a route to kind of maintain the integrity and authenticity of what we were trying to put out. This is authentic street weightlifting, as John would call it, and we wanted to keep it that. And then, of course, if you're going to be a self-publisher, you're going to have to do all the work. You're going to have to do all the marketing. You're going to have to ship every book, which once the book printed, we had several hundred orders. And in my apartment in downtown Albany, right there on South Lake, Joanna and I were boxing up books day and night, you know, and I would roll into the post office. And let me tell you, people hated me in the post office because I would roll in with several hundred books that needed to be shipped, and I'd be waiting in line, and I would get there and plop my boxes down, and I was going to be taking up one of those tellers' time for, you know, maybe the next half hour or however long it took them to scan everything. But, you know, I did what I needed to do. You know, it was just in the beginning, and, you know, there were angry customers behind me cursing my name, literally, you know, yelling all kinds of things because they had to wait a little bit. But there were other tellers open, so this is just them being impatient and projecting their sorrows on me. But it is what it is. And now the book is out. It's been out for a couple of years, and I still remember a couple things. And, you know, one, I'm so grateful for the friendship that came out of it. You know, there's so many things that I came away with from this experience and writing this book. And by far, number one is the friendship, you know, with John and Jessica North. You know, I'm forever grateful to know them and to have been through so many different experiences with them, you know, weightlifting meets, the AWF, countless seminars. And over the time, you know, in writing the book, you know, we had so many Skype meetings and I went to so many seminars. You know, if it was 10 hours away, I was going to drive there and either attend or just observe the seminars to write, you know, notes. I drove down to Charlotte, North Carolina when they were living there for the Attitude Nation Level 2 seminar because I wanted to get the next level of information that was going to be presented there to enhance the book. And, you know, that was a great trip and a great experience. And it certainly did play a lot into the final version of the book. And part of the beauty on taking our time was that it also gave John time to kind of refine his technique because he was still building it and still tweaking things from one seminar to the next. And he would call me and be like, all right, what did we say about the Superman pull? Well, I'm doing it a little bit differently now and it's working better. So, and that's just good coaching to continue to evolve your craft and to continue to improve. So that took a little bit of time there. You know, I'm doing meets, I'm living the lifestyle, lesson number two, taking athletes to meets, and we're just also living our lives. And eventually the book came along, and I remember 6 months before it came out, this brings me to lesson number five, and that is anyone can wear the mask. And I remember I finally got a hold of the cover, front and back cover of the book. You know, we had the manuscript. It was pretty close to being written. I was in the process of another revision. This is about, this is probably Christmas time. This is December, maybe January of 2014, early 2015. And I got this from Lingualinks. They sent me the cover. And I had written the back cover. The text was on it. You know, I wasn't sure if that's what was going to be on the back of the book. And I sent it to John, not knowing that he was going to, one, love it right away, like, and two, post it on his Instagram and all of his Facebook accounts, because he has several Facebook accounts. And when I saw it was posted for the world, I was mortified. And the reason that is because that was the first moment, the first sobering moment where I could feel the pit of my stomach drop, you know, that feeling where I realized people are going to read this, you know, other people are going to buy this book. My name is on it. They're going to read it and they're going to judge it. They're going to be either have a good experience or a bad experience. And man, was I nervous and just beside myself. I'm like, I hope I did a good job and I hope people will like this. And so that was just like, that was the first time I realized that. And then shortly after, he invited me onto his podcast, Weightlifting Talk, which it's now Red Circle Radio. And that was the first time I ever done a podcast before. And it was I was so nervous about that. And I had a little bit of imposter syndrome. It's like, one, like I'm not a well-known coach. I'm not a good athlete. Heck, I'm not even an author yet. Who's going to want to read this? Who's going to want to listen to it? You know, what are people going to think? You know, I'm just this random guy. Originally, when I first started to write the book, I was a ghostwriter, which a ghostwriter is someone who doesn't get credit for writing a book. You do it on the DL, you get paid, but you don't really, I think, list it on your portfolio or anything like that. You know, think about like high profile celebrities or like politicians. you know, no one, more than likely, many of them are not sitting down physically to write their book. They do interviews with someone else and that person writes the book. They get paid, but they don't get credit. It's that celebrity's name who goes on the front of the book. So anyways, I was going to be a ghostwriter. And then that slowly turned into co-author, you know, because I was showing up to all these seminars that John was doing. I was meeting people in the Attitude Nation and in the weightlifting community and promoting the book. And it just kind of turned into, you know, okay, you're the co-author. You know, you wrote the first two sections of it and John wrote all the blogs and then we edited it together. And this was very much 50-50. So, you know, let's call you the co-author. And now I was beside myself with fear on, man, like, what are people going to think? Should I even call myself an author? You know, that's maybe even something I struggle with today. You know, what should I call myself? Do I deserve to call myself this? You know, should I write more books? I'm no Tom Clancy or Stephen King or anything like that. So I had all these fears going into it. And one thing that I can think of that it makes me think about is a scene from the Into the Spider-Verse movie. So those of you who are listening to the show or you know me, you know I'm big into Marvel and superheroes and comics and the movies that they put out. And recently, you know, within the last year or so, the Into the Spider-Verse movie came out. It's a Spider-Man movie, but Spider-Man is Miles Morales, not Peter Parker. This is in an alternate reality. And I might spoil some things heading into lesson number 5 here, but I need to get through the story so you can understand lesson number 5. And so in the movie, a wormhole, so to say, opens up and Spider-Men and women from different realities come into Miles Morales' reality. And he had just became Spider-Man. He got bit by the radioactive spider. And the actual Spider-Man, the actual Peter Parker in his universe, dies. He's killed by the big bad of the film, the Kingpin. And now Miles Morales never got the opportunity to learn from him. So he has all these confidence issues. You know, he doesn't know how to be Spider-Man. He doesn't know if he can do it. And now he's being mentored by Peter B. Parker, which is another Peter Parker from a different reality, who is also a down and out Spider-Man. He is, I believe, he is supposed to be the Spider-Man from the original trilogy back in the early 2000s, except after the third movie, you know, his life kind of took a turn. He ruined his relationship with Mary Jane. They didn't get married. They didn't have a storybook ending. And he's out of shape. And he's kind of not the best Spider-Man that he could be. He's very disgruntled. He's very jaded, would be a good word. And now he is kind of tasked with teaching Miles Morales how to be Spider-Man, how to be a hero, all these things. And he doesn't really want to do it. He just wants to get back home and back to his life of boozing and eating pizza. And eventually, you know, the story goes on. We meet other spider people and end of the movie comes and they're all going home back through the world, the wormhole. And they all go through except for Peter B. Parker. And of course, Miles Morales is going to stay in his reality. Before Peter can go through, the Kingpin starts to attack again because he's the big bad of the film. And Peter Parker decides, you know what? I'm a hero again. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to risk my life because he'll probably get stuck in the current reality and die to defeat the Kingpin because he can't leave Miles alone to do it. Miles is just a kid. And Miles is like, no, you have to go home. I have to save you. So they get in a little hero's tussle. You know, they're webbing one another as they're both racing towards the Kingpin. And eventually Miles uses a move that was used on him earlier in the film by Peter B. Parker. And he's thrown him into the wormhole and he grabs him by the shirt first. And he's like, you got to go home. And Peter B. Parker looks at him and he says, what if I can't do it? What if I don't do a good job? And Miles Morales looks at him. He's like, you just have to try. You just have to let go. And then he lets go of Peter B. Parker and he falls into the wormhole onto, you know, putting his life back together in his universe. And that's kind of the first part of lesson number five, is that, you know, you just gotta go. You just gotta let go. You just have to start to begin with. And what if you fail? What if you don't do a good job? Well, you're never gonna know if you don't try. And that was just a big part of that scene. And I remember that message, and I'm like, man, that's so true about everything. And that's something that character wasn't realizing in the moment. And then if we flash forward to the end of the film, you know, finally Miles Morales is Spider-Man in his universe. And in the closing monologue, he explains, you know, anyone can wear the mask. And that, to me, you know, it means, you know, anyone can be a coach, anyone can be an author, anyone can be a mechanic, anyone can be a teacher, anyone can be president of the United States, you know, and we actually have proof of that now. But it's anyone can do the things that they want to do. They just have to, you just have to put on the mask. You have to be willing to fail. You have to take the failure and put it into productive use. And you have to believe that you can do it. And, you know, I didn't realize that at the moment when I was writing the book, or I was having all these fears or anything like that. And I was just kind of, you know, going through the throes of imposter syndrome. But I realize it now, looking back, you know, like, what if I didn't believe I could do this? What if, you know, after a year, I just went back to John and I'm like, look, you got to find someone else. I'm not your guy. You know, and I had not been willing to do those other things that led to the final project, you know, I don't know where we'd be right now. You know, obviously other opportunities wouldn't have presented themselves, you know, and who knows how deep in the weightlifting I would be. Who knows if this podcast would even be going on right now. And, you know, it stems from so many different things. On one, deciding to stay in Albany that weekend; two, grabbing a notebook before I left; and then three, you know, seizing an opportunity when it was presented to me and being able to handle the psychological ramifications that came with it. It even goes, you know, if you're not sure about being a weightlifter, you know, and doing your first weightlifting meet, well, you got to do the first one. And yeah, you might fail, but, you know, you won't know until you put on the mask, or in this case, until you put on the singlet. And anyone can do that. And really, if there are people in your life who are telling you that you can't, then you need to probably get rid of those people, because they're definitely not going to help you be the hero that you need to be. And that is, those are the five lessons that I kind of learned in reflecting on writing the Dark Orchestra book and the years in between it. You know, so just a little recap here. Lesson number one, over-deliver. If you have a job to do, do it to the 110, 20, 50,000% of your abilities, and show off some of the skills and the talent and what makes you you when you go to do that thing, and just over deliver. Lesson number two, live the lifestyle. If you want to be a rock star, well, guess what? You better start playing an instrument or writing songs, and then you got to get in front of people and play shows and get booed off stage and whatever it is you need to do. But you need to live the lifestyle of whatever it is that you're trying to pursue, and weather the goods and bads alike. Otherwise, you will probably not make it. Lesson number three, ask for help. You more than likely have a community of also very talented people around you. So invite that community in. Let them help you. You will learn a lot, and it will draw people to your cause, and more than likely, who knows, it might open up another opportunity down the road. Lesson number four, know your why, and also who you're doing whatever it is for. And it could be you're doing it for yourself, it could be you're doing it for your family, it could be you're doing it for a business partner, or whatever it is, you know why you're doing it, and understand the ins and outs, and don't let anything compromise your own personal integrity. And realize that, you know, money is an awesome thing, but really whatever it is that you are doing, you are adding to your own personal legacy, and it'll be something that, you know, when you're gone will still be standing. So don't compromise it for money. You know, money is such a I don't want to say fragile, such a temporary thing, you know, and you can get more of it if you're smart and willing to work hard. But, you know, when you look at the final project, are you going to be happy with its soul or not? And I think that's a part of lesson four and what you need to ask yourself when you're putting something out there and when other people approach you for something, you know, or maybe you have an opportunity to use a big corporate thing or a publisher, or maybe if you're a musician, you know, sign a record deal with a big company, you know, maybe you're just better off doing it yourself. And I think there's a lot of value to that. And then lesson number five, anyone can wear the mask. You know, you just have to be willing to fail, willing to start, willing to move on if need be, but you're never going to know unless you take the leap. You're never going to know if you know how good you'll do unless you put yourself out there. And you know, I'm starting to, I know imposter syndrome is a real thing, but I'm starting to, you know, think that it's just a fleeting thought. You know, if you let it affect you, then of course it becomes a bigger thing. But if you realize that, okay, at least I'm doing something, you know. And I'm putting myself out there, and other, you know, there's plenty of people who aren't willing to come out of their shell and do that, and they're never gonna find the happiness or success that could be, you know. And it's like that old saying, it's better to have tried and failed than to have failed to try in the beginning. So that's lesson number five. And I'll leave you with this. This is the first sentence from the Dark Orchestra book. And I can tell you from experience on anyone, and anyone who's written a book before knows this as well, is that it took me days, maybe even weeks, to write this one sentence. When you're sitting in front of a blank screen and you see the little cursor blinking at you and you're wondering, how do I start? Like, what am I even gonna say? You know, you just have to kind of think it over. I usually take my time, maybe to a detriment, to think about things a little too long, but this is what I came up with. This line was never edited, and I think it pretty much, you know, sums up the soul of the book, and it sums up the seminars, and it sums up life, and it signs up sums up the authenticity of, you know, the story that's being told. And this is it. So the line is, sentence is, like many of you out there in the Attitude Nation, I have lived through some dark times, and we all will. But it's obviously how you deal with those dark times and how you come away from them is what really matters. So, guys, that is my account, my story, how the Dark Orchestra book came to be. How did I write a book? And the lessons I learned from it. You know, I get asked this question quite frequently, you know, in the DMs or from people, you know, at gyms when they find out that I've written a book. And now what's pretty cool is I can point them to this podcast to kind of hear all about it. If you are interested in picking up a copy of the Dark Orchestra book, you can do so on Amazon. You can go to doweightlifting.com and order it there. You can also just talk to me in person if you're local, or maybe just shoot me a DM, pay through it through Venmo, and I'll mail you out a book. You know, I have plenty of them here at the house, or actually the apartment here in Albany, so I can certainly do that. So if you're interested, check out any of those places, seek it out. It's a great read, something I'm very proud of. In fact, another big dream of mine was to get a tattoo at some point in my life, which also, like I made the mistake with the credit cards, I am really, really happy I didn't get one in high school, which almost happened, and it just would have been bad. You know, I'm glad that I decided to wait for something meaningful. And on the cover of the Dark Orchestra book, and it's the logo of the Attitude Nation, is the red circle. And I got that red circle tattooed on the inside of my left arm. And I chose the left side because it's close to my heart, because this was such a big accomplishment for me in my life and a long-standing dream. And I thought, okay, well, it should be near and dear to my heart, so to say. And I got that red circle tattooed on my arm about a year after the book came out. And so that was another thing to kind of come off of the whole thing. And so yeah, if you're interested in getting the book, check out those places that I mentioned. And of course, make sure you follow The Barbell Strikes Back on Instagram. Follow me, James A. McDermott, on Instagram. And if you have any feedback you'd like to send to the show, either send it through there, post it on iTunes, leave a 5-star rating on Apple. And, you know, let me know. Let me know if you like this style of show. This went way longer than I thought it was going to. Joanna frequently complains that I like to monologue. You know, like, so for me to explain something that happened to her, you know, it takes me a couple minutes and she loses patience with me. But I bet you can definitely see that now on this episode. So guys, thank you again for listening. Thank you so much. Until next time.